Coming up on Twitch this week in computer hardware, Gigabit arrives in Kansas City, courtesy of Google.
We talk about GTX 660 rumors.
Rumors, baby. And we're going to talk about water cooling, the easy way, the hard way, and the most ridiculous passive heat sink you've ever seen in your life. We're all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 179, recorded July 26, 2012. Water cooling is not for wimps. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twit's weekly show where we bring you the best and most exciting news in computer hardware. We answer your tech questions and we tell you about what's exciting and what's worth your money, whether we're talking about computers, computer parts, or tablets. Joining me as always, Mr. Ryan Shrout from PCPer.com. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
We're actually in studio in Petaluma,
yep,
live, so we're not going to do any of our usual viewer questions. We're going to start tearing some stuff apart, talking about quiet PC parts. We should probably start with the news.
Let's do that. There were a couple things that were interesting that we talked about a little bit before the show. Because we're going to talk about cooling and kind of silent cooling, one of these interesting news bits that showed up was a 100-watt passive cooler.
This and the next story are kind of from the ridiculous but awesome department. In that, I don't know if you can pull up the picture. This is the biggest cooler I have ever seen in my life.
Remember a couple of weeks ago, we talked about a passively cooled GTX 680, and that was like 170 watts. But it had the ability to wrap around a PCB. Right. It had all kinds of extra space. This thing is enormous, and it just I love the way it looks with the two kind of banks.
It looks like
fins.
A plant.
Yeah, it kind of does.
A tree.
Almost like it's growing down, like vines that way.
Exactly.
They claim it'll be 100 watts, although, you know.
So that's good for any of the current Core i7 CPUs.
Absolutely. I mean, the Ivy Bridge parts are 77 watts, so you'd even have overclocking headroom if you wanted to do that.
That's a little frightening.
Now, what I'm interested is how much airflow you have to have in your case in general.
Well, it's kind of funny because I'm looking at the case we're going to pull up here in a few minutes, and I'm thinking, could you even fit something that big inside of that case?
There's no. The pictures don't have anything for relative. But, I mean, if you look at the base,
right.
I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I'm saying that's about covering this, about twice the acreage of your usual cooler.
I'm thinking you got to have like a Cosmos 2, like a Cooler Master Cosmos 2, or something that's going to have a lot of open
size
space.
Of a small barn or a dog hutch.
Yes. Yes. But those options are out there, right? And, you know, we saw it's both ways. With the GPU, we saw the passive cooler, and we're like, I don't think it's really going to be a usable option. With this, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I don't know how usable an option that's actually going to be.
Do we have a price for the Silent Max Twin Block HSF passive cooler?
I don't remember seeing one, but I'm thinking
lots.
$50 at least for a passive, probably.
That would seem cheap.
You think so?
Well, given the size and the amount of copper that's in that thing.
Yeah, well, then expect it to be higher. Is there one there?
No, that can't be right.
What's it say? $40?
No, it's the price for the fanless i850 machine.
Okay.
There's no way 1,300 pounds for a single passive cooler. That'd be like $2,000.
I think it was three pounds.
Oh, here we go. $120 US.
Oh, wow, I was way off.
Silent Max Twin Box, $120 US, $99.90, including value-added tax if you are in the UK or the EU. That thing's frightening.
So one day in the future when we do this absolutely silent, highest performance build, we have to spend $120 on a passive cooler. So
yes.
Think about that.
Okay. I'll start saving my pennies now. So Google Fiber launches in Kansas City. If you've been desperately waiting for more power, Scotty, and you thought Fios would never get to your neighborhood, guess what? Google Fiber is another incredible-sounding option. $70 a month. They're claiming a gigabit down, a gigabit up for $70 a month.
That's... It makes me angry.
Why does it make you angry?
Because I don't have that.
Yeah, it's like The Verge is what we're looking at right here. And look, 937.99 megabits per second download, 784.69 megabits per second upload.
So but here's the problem, right? That's great to see on a speed test.
Sure.
Ken and I were talking earlier today. How useful is that? How many services that you connect to on the internet are going to be able to take advantage of anything close to that on a bandwidth? Like I have 30 meg up at home, 30 megs up, right. And almost nothing actually accepts 30 megs up.
True.
So this enables unique options like maybe what the ISP can host at their local facility.
The future.
It does. I agree. Like, I want this.
What I want, okay.
Especially at $70.
Here's what I want. I want Google to have a really successful launch in Kansas City. Then I want them to come to every city in North America because they've got the money laying around to run fiber, right?
Do you think this is going to be profitable for them, though?
I don't
imagine at those prices that it can be profitable. I imagine only as a kind of a validation, vindication effort on their part.
The problem isn't the bits. The problem is the amount of bits. The problem isn't the amount of bits they're giving you. The problem isn't the fact that it's uncapped. The problem is the cost of pulling fiber to the curb, right?
They're only charging people $300 installation. That's super cheap. I mean, to bring fiber out to our office in Florence,
right.
It was a $24,000 venture, and then $300 a month for however many numbers of clients that they actually get that from. So I don't imagine they're making money on this. So I wish I could believe that if this were somehow successful, that they would just branch out immediately. But it's not a profit center for them. So it's really like,
how do you know that?
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Yes.
But I don't think it could be
one of the things that they were claiming is that they had new technology that would make it more affordable to distribute fiber. It's Google. They've got billions of dollars sitting in a war chest, so we'll find out. Tell me you don't want to walk up. Tell me you don't want to make that call, hey, Comcast.
Right.
I'm canceling because I just got a gigabit down and a gigabit up with no cap. Insert obscene gesture towards, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. No, I would, tell me don't get me wrong. I would love to do that. And I'm mad that they didn't pick Cincinnati as that area. But, you know, I move on and I'm not moving to Kansas City for it, which is what you asked me earlier.
This
I am
bitter.
I am, yeah. No, it's very bitter. Not kind of bitter.
NVIDIA GTX 660 Ti is, well, let me see if I can get the quote here from Tim Vary up on PCPro.com. So we talked about rumors of new mid-range NVIDIA Kepler graphics cards, 1.5 gigabytes or 3 gigabytes. And the truth is we don't have a whole lot of information. A bump down in the memory interface to 192-bit bus from the 256-bit interface of the GTX 670. Allegedly, the GTX 660 Ti will run the same GPU and memory clock speeds as the GTX 670. 950 megahertz base, 980 boost, and 6008 megahertz effective, respectively.
So the only thing that would be interesting about this specs, if it turns out to be true, is that they're very close to a GTX 670.
Yeah, for about $400.
The GTX 670 is $400.
Yeah.
So, and we assume this card would be less than that, right? Obviously, it's going to be down in the stack.
One would hope.
But how much less, right? If it's really close to performance, are they going to charge $100 less? It seems kind of like a bad idea on their part, really.
Maybe they want to crater their 670 market.
Maybe that's exactly... That's what I'm thinking. It's like, why would they do this to themselves?
Google's going to spend all their money bringing fiber to my house, and NVIDIA's going to tank their high-end
crater
profits.
Crater their own prices.
Yeah, okay.
So it's if the specifications turn out to be true, it's a great card.
Right.
If it comes out at $299, like the rumors are saying, that's awesome.
Are they really talking about a narrower bus, like dropping that much off of the word length?
So you go from 256 to 192 in those rumors.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that will actually do to performance.
Okay.
Now, they say it's still going to run at the same clock speed. So, you know, in theory, that's what we'd be benchmarking.
It'll
when
be
that
parsing
comes
data
out.
Just as fast. It just won't be moving as much.
Yeah, so the overall memory bandwidth will come down.
Right.
So that's... Where does that come into play? Super high resolutions, super high texture resolutions.
It's going to impact Metro.
Right, but when you're talking about a card that's $100 less,
right, you can probably afford to.
I think you'd be willing to give up.
You have to give up something somewhere to save money.
64 bits of memory bandwidth.
There you have it. OWC, this is actually something I was really excited about. Otherworld Computing, if you're a Mac fanatic, you probably know about them. They're pretty much the only shop that's been guaranteeing SSDs that work with all of the Macintosh hardware for the past couple of years. And we've been talking about PCI Express Thunderbolt cases. We've seen rumors. We've seen pictures. This, I think, is the first one you're going to be able to order. The Mercury Helios PCI Express Thunderbolt Expansion Chassis. Basically, it's a PCI Express 2.0 adapter over Thunderbolt. So it's kind of trippy looking.
Did they mention what kind of power support it has? Does it require external power? I assume it would require external power, but I wonder how big of a power brick it comes with.
Could you do graphics cards,
something like that? By the way, so Ken did point out to me, I think, what show was it on? They were talking about, Alex Lindsay was talking about another Thunderbolt dock that is already shipping, I think, as well, called the...
Is it shipping? Because this one's supposed to, you can order now.
The Sonnet Echo Express, but it's $600. This one's $399, yeah. So it's a couple hundred dollars less. And from OWC, and like you said, I would order this part from them.
Basically, there's a small DC power supply for the additional power you need for it. What's kind of funny is they're also doing it in bundles with 120 gigabyte, 240 gigabyte, 960 gigabyte. Basically, you can get like one of the Mercury Excelsior PCI Express SSDs, mm-hmm. one of those ridiculous SSDs. So now I want you to have like, what I'm really curious is going to be whether or not anybody's actually going to run graphics cards over these.
In theory, it should be possible. In theory, that's what you want to do with these, right? The whole idea, one of the big ideas of Thunderbolt is PCI Express extension. So you plug in a graphics card, you attach it to a Thunderbolt-ready system, and then all of a sudden you install drivers and you've got another external graphics card. But there's interesting things that go on there when you got display connectivity. All Thunderbolt has DisplayPort routed through it. Are there going to be any complications there?
Well, it's got a pass through. It's got a Thunderbolt pass through. Yeah. No cable, by the way. $400. You got to buy your $50 Thunderbolt cable, which I'm used to at this point. I've discovered that is the cost of Thunderbolt. It does have pass through. I'd be really curious if it will actually, because I'm seeing mentions of GPUs absolutely nowhere.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things where. Here's what's been validated, storage.
Right.
Here's what's been validated is just bandwidth, right? When we start getting into these extreme amounts of functionality.
So basically,
it's going to be on your own for now, and we'll see what happens.
We're waiting for you to whip out your credit card to grab the Acer S5. By the way, we're going to be reviewing that on Texola next week, the Acer S5. Yeah. Plugging it into the Thunderbolt port on the Acer to see if you can get better GPU performance.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the ideal spot for that is on a Windows laptop where you want that kind of extra computing power. On a desktop, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I could see if it functions on all the desktops. Gigabyte just told me they were shipping me the dual Thunderbolt port motherboard today. So I could hook up the graphics card and then, some external Drobos or something like that.
Well, actually, Drobo pricing. Nice segue.
Yes, exactly. Drobo's Thunderbolt devices kind of announced for pre-order. Still expensive. It looks like $6 or $849 for the Drobo 5D.
Which is 5-bay Drobo S with Thunderbolt and USB 3.0.
Right.
Yeah.
So best connectivity options you can get today. Right, but $849, and then the really cool looking 3.5-inch model is going to be $649. Two and a half inch drive model.
I was watching when this announcement came out. All the people I edit with, who like they've got their Canon, their TIs,
right,
and they were like, "We want the precious." So the Drobo Mini is basically 4 2.5-inch SATA drives,
and it's
a
cool
mini RAID
too.
Well, a mini Drobo.
So this is, we at our office, we use a Drobo FS, which is a gigabit network attached Drobo, but it's really, really bottlenecked on its performance.
Sure. Gigabit's funny that way.
Well, I mean, it's not gigabit. Right. It's processing power internally in order to handle all the stuff it's going to do. Like, we're talking 60, 70 megs, kind of what you're used to getting. I'm curious to see if they've been able to get past those internal bottlenecks to get through to, the full speed of what Thunderbolt can do, right? So I tested the Pegasus R4, and we were able to hit 900 megabytes a second with 4 SSDs installed, right? Just to get the maximum throughput. So will they be able to do the same thing with their
Drobo
technology?
SSDs installed?
That'd be really, I haven't. Alan probably has. I'm sure he has, but not an FS for sure. There's no use. So
sorry. Every so often, I have this vision of what Alan's sort of closet of storage doom must look like.
It's way bigger than
millions
a closet.
Of dollars.
It's got to be bigger than a closet. I mean, it's stacks of SSDs,
SSDs
on
are
a
small.
Table. He makes a bed out of them. Somebody told me.
I don't want to know about that. Asus PC Per at Fry's for the Republic of Gamers gaming event.
Yes.
When is that?
That is this Saturday. Mm-hmm. And the event is Saturday and Sunday. I'll be there on Saturday. They're going to have some really cool demos, do overclocking demos, show off some brand new products, let people kind of get hands-on and ask questions of people. NVIDIA will be there. Patriot will be there. Antec will be there.
Nice.
Inside Fry's and Outside Fry's.
In Sunnyvale, California?
Sunnyvale. Okay. The one in Sunnyvale. It's right near the AMD headquarters down there. I'm familiar with that. And then on Saturday, I'll be hosting a panel discussion. no real set topic, just in general, what do we think of the hardware world as it is now, what direction it's going to go in, and and we'll see reps from AMD, Asus, Patriot, and Antec there as well.
Will you be signing autographs?
I guess. If you want it, it's not worth anything. So, sure.
Will you sign my
GPU, as long as it's not on a contract or a check that I don't know about, I'll
He's
sign
smart.
It. Yeah. Sign this, but don't look. Don't ever do that.
And gaming like it's 1999.
Okay, I just wanted to talk about this article real quick. I thought this was something you would really like.
No, I love this.
So Matt Smith at PC Per wrote an article where he's like, he found all these game discs, right? And he's like, yeah, I can go buy these again, most of them, but not all of them, at Good Old Games or maybe on Steam or something like that. But I didn't really want to do it. I've got these discs. I don't have to worry about DRM with this. Can I build a system that can still play this really well? So he went through and built a system that's using Windows 98. Mm-hmm. He went through a whole bunch of stuff about what you could build it out of. You know, like there's pictures of a Pentium 3 processor.
Right.
I mean, like the idea of going back to a slot installed CPU just has this nostalgic feel to me. It's like, wow, you get the mechanical click on both sides and that type
Let's
of thing.
Let's see if we can crack that vintage AMD processor.
The key that he found was, go find these little computer stores that have used hardware,
right?
And you can get it super cheap. He bought he lives up in the Portland area, and for $40, he bought this kind of bare bones system here that has an Asus K8V XM motherboard with a
looks like an
AMD Simpron.
Yeah, it looks
processor.
Like an eMachines box that I have sitting under my desk right now.
You know, AGP slot, 512 megs of RAM, a 40 gig hard drive. I mean,
Goodwill, by
impressive.
The way, is not a good place to find really inexpensive computing hardware.
So, I mean, and then a $5 GeForce 5600 MX graphics card, right? I mean, that's... I think, this is my favorite part, is he found a Microsoft Sidewinder Force Feedback 2 joystick for $5 at one of these places.
And that's probably about the only machine you can still run that on.
Right. And then, of course, you got to get the classic Microsoft and Telemouse.
Where's he finding drivers? Or is he running a modern operating system?
So he's running Windows 98, and the issue was drivers. And there's a lot of websites you can go to that will host older versions, and he said there's a lot of security issues involved with that, as well as running Windows 98 still. So he's like, this is a machine you should probably not have on the internet, on your network.
One that you want to sort of create a
connect
yellow
it to the
zone
internet,
on your network.
Download your drivers, disconnect it, and if there's a virus included in all that, it stays on there, right? And you kind of
because you can't get a current antivirus for 98.
Maybe you can run Norton 2007 or something like that.
Norton 2003.
It's 99. There we go. So I mean, it was fun. It's a cool little thing, and he got it working, and he got to play his games, and he kind of walks through some of the things that you will run into.
Yay.
Yeah. It's cool. And he even went with the, using a CRT monitor and all that kind of stuff.
So. I missed my last 21-inch CRT that
I looked at my basement when he posted this. I looked at my basement and I found that I have three CRT monitors sitting in my basement.
Really?
One of them is a 22-inch with a 2048 by 1536 resolution.
You should be
that
using
was
that
expensive.
In your You should be using that in your office.
That was when we were doing graphics testing and it was like we gotta have the highest resolution possible. I don't even remember what I spent on it, but I don't want to know.
Instead of getting the cat leap, you should just pull that thing out of the basement.
We did use a CRT to test the cat leap, but we'll think about that.
Oh my goodness! I got my Raspberry Pi showed up last week. Got it booting. If you haven't seen it, it's really cool. Rasp BMC, which is something I'll somehow actually learn how to say. It's essentially XBMC. On a distro optimized for the Raspberry Pi, which is a $25 ARM device. So I actually got that up and running.
I was just excited when they were shipping.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, finally we get, I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet.
But. Now this is something to start thinking. Well, there's also, it's kind of cool. If you go to the Raspberry Pi website, which should be raspberrypi.org.
Yep.
They actually, if you go into the download sections on that web page, which I'm clicking so none of you at home can follow along, because that's the way I roll, apparently. You can actually get, there's the Arch Linux ARM Raspbian Wheezy, which is essentially a Raspbian optimized version of Debian, which has LXDE, Midori, the development tools, and there's the Qton Pi, which is an embedded Linux platform, which I will probably never be cool enough to run. But it's, I love the fact there's a customized version of Debian for the $25 Raspberry ARM device.
I mean... I think it's really impressive. I can't wait to see what people are able to do and build and create with these types of things. And that's really what the whole goal of it was, right? Was to enable this a completely different type of PC. Basically, the innards that exist in your Nexus 7 or any kind of, you know, Android-based tablet, your cell phone, not quite that small, but pretty close.
Pretty close.
Now, what can you do with it? What can you do with it?
It's interesting. First of all, I should say, you know, watch Techzilla on Tuesday because I'm going to actually show what it takes. One of the funniest things was, like, just getting it to boot for the first time. My biggest problem was finding a 700 milliamp power supply, USB, because it's micro USB for the power.
Right.
And, of course, like, I had a couple of old,
And the default wall plugs are 500, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was, like, it's the silly things like that. Like, you know, the stupid bumps in the road and then getting the millions, like, okay, I really need to find a Bluetooth adapter for this and...
Yeah.
Does it have Bluetooth on board and I'm just too stupid to figure that out? That's an interesting thought. Hey, why don't I not research that in the middle of the show?
That's right.
And we actually had one more thing. You have a panel at QuakeCon coming up.
Yeah.
Is panel the right word?
Probably not. we call it the hardware workshop. It's right. Basically, I get up on stage, we bring up a couple of guests up on stage to go through a couple of like tech demos and, mm-hmm. and new cool stuff. NVIDIA will be there, MSI will be there. And then we're also going to give away like a ton of stuff. If you go to pcpro.com/workshop, you can see the schedule for it. You'll see the timing and all that kind of stuff. We're going to live stream it if you can't be there.
Cool.
I'm not sure if you're going to be able to win anything if you're not there. We're trying to figure out how to do that, but it will be very, very difficult to do that. But what we are going to do is we've got things like 100 AMD processors to give away. We've got... GTX 680s, we got GTX 690s, mm-hmm. we've got really, really cool stuff to do, too. So
nice.
Yeah, so we'll have some cool demos. It'll be at QuakeCon. It's in Dallas, Texas, Saturday, August 4th. So next Saturday.
So much fun.
It'll be fun.
You're traveling a lot.
I know. Yeah, I'm in San Jose area the entire week here for like literally 7 or 8 days, home for 2 days, leave for QuakeCon. It's the most fun
More
event
Vegas.
That we do. Right. Back to Texas. I'll have to show everybody else that I bring with me what they are.
I also like to apologize for walking in front of your camera. I thought it was that camera.
That's all right.
But now we can actually see the monitor. We should take a moment to thank our sponsors.
No, we shouldn't.
We shouldn't?
No.
Well, in which case, we should tell
Let's
you.
Let's go right into the stuff.
Okay. Twitch, TWICH at twit.tv. That's our email address if you want to send us a viewer question. We're going to skip viewer questions today, and we're going to talk about hardware and keeping your PC silent and some of the things you can do to do that. actually, take it back. Oh, no. Sorry. That was the Victor question was a little different. Victor,
yes.
We'll get your question next week.
Yeah.
But let's start with the case design.
Yeah.
So one of the things we're talking about, the passively cool, that 100-watt passive cooler earlier in the show. And this is not a passive cooler. This is very much an active cooler. And what's kind of funny about that is that passive cooler is about twice the size of this. And this is an Arctic Cooling Freezer 13 Pro.
That's a big heat sink on its own, right?
Yeah.
For relatively, you know, like, I mean...
Well, the idea is, right, is you increase the amount of surface area you can move the air across, which means you can use a slower moving fan. And the idea is that the more space you have to dissipate the heat, mm-hmm. the slower the air needs to move through it, mm-hmm. and the less noise it generates. So this is supposed to be running about 20 dBi when it's active. I can't actually hear this thing running, even when I've maxed out the thermals on this. This is an Antec case, and I'm trying to think.
Is this the Mini P180?
That sounds about right. And it's kind of funny. Do we have the side panel for this?
Yeah.
We should probably start with the side panel, because when we talk about cases that are designed for being quiet, one of the things they're doing is they're trying to make the sides rigid, and they're trying to isolate the sound inside. So if I flip this over, you'll see where there's basically a layer of plastic and this, absorbing panel underneath
case,
this aluminum.
Very few cases have a door that feels this good. I don't know how to describe it exactly, because there's just a density to it. But it's not super heavy.
Right. It feels like a soup can, not a beer can.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like and there's density on this. You know, they've basically done some stuff here to increase the rigidity on this, which will help prevent it from transferring acoustic noise. And then when you start getting inside of it, actually, even before we do that, take a look at the feet. So it's got like soft silicone feet.
Right.
So that's going to help keep it from transferring noise into your desktop, your tabletop. And as you start getting into things like the...
there. Let's see if we can get that in that shot.
Yeah, this is the one I have like 12 terabytes of drives inside of right now. As you start pulling out the drive cages, it's kind of funny. Like, to pull the drive cage out, I have to unclip this. It's not loose, so that won't vibrate.
There's just, like, tons of tiny little things that make this great.
It starts to add up. So the hard drives, I don't know if you can just see these. Yeah, apparently I need to rescrew all those in. So these are actually silicone isolators that are actually in between the drives and the drive cage. They're the screws that hold the drives in and the drive cages. And apparently I'll be screwing all these down since it looks like they vibrated loose on this side, which is yet another reason to keep Loctite in your
so the benefit
case of tools.
Vibration.
Yes.
It can also improve your performance of your hard drives a little bit, because I know vibration tends to mess with the read speeds of the head speeds of hard drives too.
I don't know if I can measure it, but it sounds like a good idea. If nothing else, the less the drives, the less the drives vibrate each other, the longer they should last.
Yeah.
But I'll slide that back in there. But it's interesting when you start taking a look at what's going on.
Did you mention this here? So, like, this is a piece of metal that separates the power supply mm-hmm. area from our main CPU area, and there's this little bit of foam padding here mm-hmm. on this. And you wouldn't think much of it, but it just makes sure that if the door and this happen to meet, it's not rattling.
Well, it's an engine. You know, it's kind of like you're thinking about your case now as an engineered system mm-hmm. rather than as, you know, a box, right? So you give it more structural rigidity. You do things to it to prevent the vibrations from being transferred. And part of the whole point of having this down here is to isolate the heat mm-hmm. from the power supply and keep that from sort of, you know, contaminating the area with all the expensive bits like your GPU and your CPU and your hard drives.
Yeah.
So let me screw that in place before this falls out.
You don't want to ruin all your hard drives.
So if you talk about what makes quieter fans quiet, or should we talk about water coolers? How about the chat room? You make the call.
What makes fans quieter? Lower RPM.
And we should point out, Reposter, no. Power supplies are on the top of the sort of latest, greatest, most recent generation of cases. Traditionally, power supplies are at the bottom of the case so that the heat from the power supply can float up and irritate everything else inside the case.
Well, it kind of goes back and forth, right? The idea, I think one of the ideas for a bottom-mounted power supply was to lower your center of gravity on a tall case as well. Nobody wants that.
That's true. Actually, it's kind of funny. You're right. It's been so long since I've had one of the older cases.
So we've had some new cases that are doing both, mm-hmm. either or. And it really just is, you know, it also affects cable routing and things like that, right? So one of the things you can do is you can take the power cables from the power supply up behind everything a little bit easier when it's bottom-mounted as well. So we're going to open up a couple of different fans here.
This is the Antec True Quiet.
Don't you love blister packaging?
I love blister packaging.
It's the best.
And let's see if we can get that shot in there. Oops. Are we at the above camera? It's also terribly confusing. So many cameras, so little time. So obviously we have, you know, multiple fan blades. We've got a fan design here. But one of the things, I don't know if you can quite see me squeezing this, but again, they've done a silicone mount to isolate the fan from the case, basically any noise generated from the fan from the case.
And so that one doesn't. I thought those Antec ones came with these. This is a different one. This is the Noctua that you brought, and these are what I think make.
Oh, funny.
So this is how, instead of using a screw
to hold it down
to attach it, you can use these with essentially, these are like little rubber,
right?
You know, kind of stretchy things, and you slide it through, and you pull it through the case, right? So you would just pull that through, and then it locks in place, and it makes any fan kind of low vibration, low noise.
I mean, it's interesting because you're looking at, like, they're claiming for the Antec True Quiet 19.9 dBA at speed, and I want to say it's as quiet or quieter for the Noctua.
All the other things you'll see, like, and this gets into the benefits of this are debatable, but if you look at the fan blades on this, mm-hmm. they're not rounded. Like, you'll see, like, they're sharp.
Yeah.
They have a very specific pattern to them. I don't, it's almost impossible for you guys to see on camera. But, you can see along the edge here. There we go. Yeah. So you can see it kind of has, like, this weird kind of wavy pattern to it. Mm-hmm. And that's all in an effect to reduce air noise and that kind of stuff. So it's I was waiting too.
Something I particularly love about this fan, I don't know if we can quite get the shot on that, is it has a... No, it's not going to show.
The arrows for airflow.
Yeah, an arrow to tell you where the airflow is going and which way the fan is spinning. Which if you've ever like mounted a fan on backwards and have to pull an entire PC. And it's kind of funny, like, it, you know...
Nice sleeved cable?
Yeah, they've sleeved the cable. It's just... They're a little more expensive, but they're really nice.
Yeah, the difference between cheap fans and even modestly priced, you know, higher quality fans is pretty dramatic. And then you can get into really expensive ones. This one's not necessarily has any of those fancy features. It's just enormous.
I just saw it in like, you know, this is a classic... I am an overclocker. I am a case modder. Look, I have LEDs built into the fan.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's
LEDs built into it. Now, some cases will integrate fans this size. I think this is a 200, is that right?
Yeah, 200. Actually, I think it's a 220-millimeter fan. No, 200-millimeter.
200-millimeter fan. Some cases, like the Corsair 600T, actually mounts something almost this size. I think it might be a 180 on the top of it to draw air in. So, I mean, the problem with this... is that you have to have a very specific case.
Right. Or just start drilling holes and cutting...
Or start drilling holes.
What? You don't remember case modding?
I do.
700 CFM, 19 dB, and I want to say these are...
What are the CFMs
these
on
these?
These
are about...
this is 600.
100 CFM. That's 600 RPM. 100 CFM for the Noctua, okay. And it should be about 100 CFM for... No, 35.8 CFM for the
general rule of thumb: larger fans can spin slower, can generate less noise, while doing the same amount of work in terms of cooling down your system.
Well, it's funny, the Noctua comes with the low noise adapter and the ultra low noise adapter, and I don't think you're going to be able to see it after the video is compressed. But essentially, they are power adapters with a resistor soldered in place under heat shrink tubing. And if you use the low noise adapter, it spins at 900 RPM, and the ultra-low noise adapter, it spins at 600 RPM, and it effectively cuts the airflow in half.
Rather than having a fan controller or something like that, you actually just hardwire in that speed.
Yeah, it's kind of clever, it's one less thing to have to worry about inside of your case, but, you know, you're going to get the super quiet fan, but you're also going to get half the airflow delivery.
And that's
pretty much the decision you're making on any of these devices.
Yeah, I mean, you have to make a decision if you're going for high performance or you're going for low noise.
Right.
And with almost any fan, with any case, with any kind of design. One of the cases we saw recently that was also from Corsair had the ability to do both. It had noise dampening material, or you could take off parts of the side panel and put in extra fans.
Well, it's amazing when you start looking at these sealed case designs that really control the airflow. That's kind of one of the things I want to do with that Antec case, is start sealing it off and seeing how much of it I can enclose to minimize the noise. So let's take a look at...
You want to do that one?
Yeah, we've got the Corsair 870. A lot of people ask, one of the most regular questions we get asked is, should I water cool? How should I water cool? Actually, we can pull that one out.
Pull this one out here too? All right.
And this is the Corsair 870, and this is what you would like call a sealed water cooling system. And so when we say that, we have the radiator. So we've got this big honking radiator that goes in the back of your case, and it is already plumbed. It is sealed. You are not having to deal, and they even actually pre-apply a heat sink, although I'd probably, scrub that off and start all over again because I'm a fool that way. But the idea is that, the only way this is going to leak is if you cut the cable or pound a nail through the radiator. And it's fundamentally impossible to screw up your system with this unless something goes horribly, horribly, horribly wrong.
Right. So water cooling scares people. The idea of having liquid inside your PC case, as it should, realistically, should unnerve you a little bit. A couple of years ago, these started to become very, 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 very popular. Mm-hmm. Self-contained, no maintenance. You always talk about refilling it, that kind of thing. They're using special liquids in there so that they don't evaporate out or anything like that. And obviously, it's well sealed. And you can install this in almost any case.
Right.
All you have to have is... So this mounts where your processor is, just like any other heatsink. It comes with all the things for the different sockets. And then this goes on the back of the case where a normal 120-millimeter fan would go. So, it'll typically mount like that. And then you can put a fan on either side. Yeah, see how we demonstrate here? There we go.
It's the way we roll.
And so you don't have to use both fans, but you can. And they have... Corsair has a lot of these different action ones. They have the H100, which is actually 240-millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that requires a different kind of case. You need to have top-mounted type of thing. But, you get these from from Corsair, from Antec, from Thermaltake, from tons of different people. So just check out reviews and all that kind of stuff. I know some of them will integrate with different lighting systems and all that kind of stuff.
Do you feel like they offer the same cooling advantage they used to in the past? Because you used to have a really fat delta between water cooling and even the best air coolers, and now the best air coolers are unbelievably efficient.
I would consider this on par with the best air coolers.
Okay.
So these are not going to get you the same kind of performance you can get from a custom rig, mm-hmm. something like this, but they tend to be pretty quiet. You know, like if you just use one fan, you're going to cut down on your noise there. Right. And they tend to be pretty quiet, tend to perform very well, and sometimes they take up a little bit less space than these high-end heat sinks too.
Yeah.
Right? So, I mean, yeah, if you look at that one that you had, I mean, it takes up a lot of space. yeah, there we go. I mean, so you look at how that radiator compares to that, and it's smaller. It is smaller, and then it would mount out here. So, you know, you do kind of free up a little bit of space if you wanted to if you have a window on your system that kind of makes things look cool. Yeah, there we go. So you get this idea of how things shape up. Actually, they're very similar in terms of dimensions, just in general.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
But that's going to be back here.
It'll be mounted here. Yeah. So it's pretty much any system that I've built that's new fairly recently, we have used something like this.
Right.
One of these from Antec or Corsair or whoever. Just because they're quick, they're easy, they're not hard to install, which is kind of the opposite when you get into this.
So this is a traditional water cooling device as found in the laboratory of Techzilla. This is a, I would say SwiftTech, yeah. Yep. So, yeah. Maximum fluid temperature, 140 degrees Fahrenheit. Maximum pressure, 50 PSI, which is a lot of freaking pressure. And this is a full-on water block. So normally, you would probably, in the olden days before the seal devices, you would buy a water block, you would buy a pump, you would have a tank and a radiator, and then you would start buying tubing, and depending on how crazy you were,
clamps.
You would either have, you know, clamps and, you know, right angle tubing.
You had to think about that, right? Because was this going to restrict the flow of the entire system?
And, you know, people are at home like, why would you do that? Until the first time you actually bend
Kink
something
it.
90 degrees
yeah.
and you find out, you know, your thermals go through the roof and then you realize there's that one spot that's captured.
Yep.
And, of course, you would also have to bleed all of this, the air out of this.
That, yes.
Which is a great way to kill a perfectly innocent motherboard.
Right. So, the self-insulation had all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, it still does, right? You've got to get everything out. You get the air out. They've done that work for you on the self-manufacturer. But the performance you can get for this is obviously a lot greater. I mean, just...
Yeah,
how do you tell that? Look at the size of the tubing. Look at the difference in that, right? So the more water you can move through there, mm-hmm. the more fluid you can move, the better cooling you're going to get.
And it gets really interesting because for this one... I actually had it hooked up to a car radiator. I found a small radiator that was off of like a Dodge minivan with a 12 volt fan on it. Ran the fan at 5 volts, which is relatively quiet.
Right.
I had like a gallon and a half of coolant. So thermals were no longer an issue with that particular machine. I also had a PC case with a car radiator on the
right.
on the outside of it. But that also operates opportunities. Like we were talking to some folks, I think in Texas or Arizona,
mm-hmm.
6 or 8 weeks ago, and they wanted to figure out, can I use water cooling to move the heat from my processor and my GPU outside of my house? And I never really thought about that until I got my big sort of rendering slash
right.
server machine in the small closet in the front of my house. My wife opened the door and she's like, I'm going to leave the door open. It's like 90 degrees in there. I'm like, ha, 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 ha. And I'm like, wow, it's like
really
90
is.
Degrees in there.
Yeah.
So that I may end up, you know.
We talked about that last week where we're going to try to drill through the floor, maybe put some radiators down there.
That'll really freak out the neighbors.
Yeah. So what's also interesting is in the transition from this to this, there was right. another mid-step. Remember the coolants? Devices,
I was. Actually
I still have two of those.
One of the ones where it's like the thing that sits on top of your case.
Yes,
and it came with the plastic packet. I actually have one of
yes.
those. It still has the plastic packet
yeah.
of fluid.
So this was a device that would basically It was rectangular, set on top of your case, or you could really put it anywhere. I have mine hanging from a shelf, like from a hook.
Right,
and it had the pump and the reservoir and like the temperature monitoring all encompassed in this thing, and then you had two tubes come out the back,
right.
input and output, and then you still wired your CPU block, your GPU block, your chipset block, you know, whatever it is you wanted to cool. and it would come out the back of the case. That's why so many cases still today have those
big fat ports on the
those back. Holes on the back of them. And most of the people have never seen what those actually do.
I don't think there are any. No,
none on that. Yeah, and you'll see these holes on it. What's that kind of for? It's like, well, to bring these in and out of your system,
right?
For external radiators and all that kind of deal.
And it's funny. I got to say, for this one, I think it was like $75. This plus the tank we use, I think I ended up having about $200 in parts in that.
That's actually not that bad. Like water cooling, you could get, when you start getting into high end pumps, high end water blocks. I mean, how much water blocks were probably? I mean, you can still buy them today. I mean, we're talking about this archaic.
It's not
technology. They definitely still make this stuff. Right, and graphics cards, they're making new blocks for the Kepler cards and all that kind of stuff.
That's what I'm sitting there, and I'm like, gosh, if I want to take all the heat from my GPU, from my 920, put it in the basement, I'm going to have to buy a GPU, I'm going to have to replumb everything, and
it's
then the twitching starts again.
This is, I'm going to do this while I build my PC.
Right.
This is, I'm going to plan my PC around it.
Right.
And it's going to be a multi-day project at the beginning.
If you need to have a gaming machine built by Friday, it's Wednesday, and you don't live near, Frozen. I don't even know if Frozen CPU has a retail store. if you don't have the sort of monster of all computer stores within striking distance of your house, you're probably not water cooling by this week.
That's one of my favorite things.
Unless you buy.
Right. That's one of my favorite things about QuakeCon is because you'll see a lot of people in the BYOC that have the most interesting cooling configurations that they've spent an entire year designing, right? So we have we're part of the case mod contest there again, and we'll see a lot of this kind of stuff. Well, we saw one last year that was, Ken, what was this called? The fluid that they used for the, basically it was like
Fluorinert.
Yeah,
that's
$300
a gallon.
Exactly. And he had his case sitting in it, and so there's no heatsink on the processor, there's no heatsink on the graphics card, and it just boils up the water, and the heat kind of rises up to the top.
We use Fluorinert we submerged an entire PC for overclocking inside of Fluorinert, and then circulated basically. Yeah,
I mean, it was so cool. It created this really cool effect of where the side of the processor just kind of bubbled a little bit, and it kind of rose up like it was like an aquarium.
Yeah.
And he said he was going to try to make it a business. Hopefully, he's there again this year, and I can.
That's an expensive
get
build.
One from him. Yeah, yeah. We have all the components at our office in Florence to build a submerged. Oil.
I have never had
the guts to do it, to bring in 30 gallons of oil into the office and pour it into this thing that I constructed and hope that it doesn't leak.
Fluorinert doesn't scare me as much as I built one with mineral oil. The biggest problem is, unless you have a really good feed store somewhere near your office, you're going to be buying
No, I do. We do. I live in Kentucky. We've got feed stores.
No, but it's because you can get mineral oil in bulk.
Right.
Sweet oats, corn treats. Oh, 5 gallons of mineral oil. Because when you roll into a 24-hour drugstore and you buy 12 things of mineral oil,
they
you
might
get a
question
really
you.
Awesome look.
Visit from the sheriff, maybe?
Not so much.
Yeah, all right.
They mostly want to know if
so, I mean, cool. That's something that we really need to do once I kind of settle back is build that oil PC, and we could feature that on this. Because, I mean, that's...
Let me know if it kills your power supply inside of, 6 weeks like it did mine.
I'm sure it will. what I'm planning on doing is building it, setting it up, and, letting it kind of just idle there and be a cool thing to look at the office. Maybe make it a set piece. Can't actually put fish in it. I don't know any fish that live in oil.
Oil fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's coming up next on PC Per, sir?
So all this week is all prep for QuakeCon, right? So all of our guys are setting up for that. We're all kind of organizing how we're going to stream it and all that kind of stuff, getting everything ready. We definitely have reviews of the Lenovo X230.
Nice.
We did post the Nexus 7 review if you want to see that, what our take on that was. A little Llano PC review. We took... So as a precept to it, we're giving away 100 A8-3870 APUs at our workshop.
Oh, wow.
So there are going to be 100 people that leave QuakeCon with this APU. What am I going to do with this now?
Go to PCPer.com.
Go to PCPer.com. We have a Llano build, and you can build it for home theater PC purposes, mainstream gaming purposes. We built one of my favorite cases. This is Leon Lee Mini ITX case that it can fit 6 hard drives in it.
How many watts is that CPU pulling?
Probably 90 watts.
Okay.
It's fairly high up there.
Okay.
But,
I was just wondering.
From a system as a whole, if you're using a Llano, you don't want a discrete graphics card.
Right.
Right? So your whole system's going to do 200 watts, maybe, at a peak. So, we're at a 100-watt processor, you got motherboard and an SSD.
No.
There's nothing to it.
Maybe I can turn the Raspberry Pi into the home server in my house. That's not going to work, so it won't run the Sonos software.
Yeah, I mean, how are you going to attach all these drives to something like that, too?
I'll figure it out.
All right. More power to you.
So we're going to boot. We're going to show how to start the Raspberry Pi on Techzilla next week.
Awesome.
We have the Acer S5 with the motorized USB ports.
Uh huh.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll talk about that next week. And I'm not even going there, dude. I'm so not.
I'm interested in learning what me about the Raspberry Pi stuff, because I'm super interested in it, but I haven't done near the amount of research that you have.
I just got feral because I wanted the delete expletive thing to boot.
Yeah.
And I did what it
took.
And I found the simplest and least painful way to make a boot. Now I'm going to do it more. I think I may end up with multiple SD cards. You can pull one SD card in, put the next one in, and it boots.
Huh. Okay. All right.
So you can actually swap your entire operating system.
So it's like how computers used to be.
Oh,
you
want to
boot it? You only can boot it when you put the floppy disk in, right? Right.
No, so. But this is a 32 gigabyte SSD, of which I'm using like a half a gigabyte probably for the system. That's about it for Twitch this week in computer hardware. PCPer.com at Ryan Shroud, Techzilla.com at Patrick Norton. We remain incredibly creative with the naming.
Still, nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah. So I mean, it was out of last year. I really wish I could come up here more and do these, because I think we can show way more interesting things.
Well, it's fun to actually be able to. Plus, we don't have the Skype delay between our conversations.
Yeah. We have all kinds of other issues with our conversations, but not Skype delay.
Want me to adjust that mic for you?
No, that's good.
That's it for this edition of This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shroud.
We'll see you next week.